From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with the author Maya Rodale, whose new novel is The Mad Girls of New York, published by Berkeley. Maya Rodale is the best-selling and award-winning author of funny feminist fiction, including historical romance, YA, and historical fiction. A champion of the romance genre and its readers, she is also the author of Dangerous Books for Girls, The Bad Reputation of Romance Novels Explained. Maya reviews romance for NPR and has appeared in Bustle, Glamour, Shondaland, BuzzFeed, The Huffington Post, and PBS. She began reading romance novels in college at her mother's insistence and has never been allowed to forget it. Here's a little information about the Mad Girls of New York. In 1887 New York City, Nellie Bly has ambitions beyond writing for the ladies' pages, but all the editors on Newspaper Row think women are too emotional, respectable, and delicate to do the job. But then the New York World challenges her to an assignment she'd be mad to accept and mad to refuse. Go undercover as a patient at Blackwell's Island Insane Asylum for Women. For months, rumors have been swirling about deplorable conditions at Blackwell's, but no reporter can get in. That is, until Nellie feigns insanity, gets committed, and attempts to survive 10 days in the madhouse. Inside, she discovers horrors beyond comprehension. It's an investigation that could make her career if she can get out to tell it before two rival reporters scoop her story. I spoke to Maya Rodale in late April. We talked about everything from historical fiction and women's suffrage to stunt journalism and bangs. I hope you enjoy our conversation. I wanted to start by talking a little bit about, well, first, I really loved your epigraph, which was courage in women is often mistaken for insanity. That was by the psychiatrist of suffragist Alice Paul. So that seems like a good place to start. I mean, this period in time, women are given very little due and very little opportunity. So do you want to just talk a little bit about that and maybe how you became interested in Nellie Bly's story?
Sure. And good morning. I'm so thrilled to be chatting with you today. And I'm so thrilled you picked up on that epigraph. I found that quote and I thought, oh my gosh, this perfectly encapsulates kind of the spirit of the book. And the novel Mad Girls of New York is about Nellie Bly and her undercover stint in an insane asylum, but it's also about how women of this period, if they were at all inconvenient or difficult or challenging in any way, were kind of deemed insane and tried to shut away. So to keep acting out and to asserting oneself was a huge act of courage for women in history.
Right. I mean, that's the theme of the yellow wallpaper, right? Isn't it? You know, just women were often just sort of locked up and locked away if things, you know, and there are quotes in this book about how inconvenient women get locked away, and you know, the inconvenience of how hard a woman's life was at this time is just sort of omnipresent. So what's true in the book and what's not true?
That is a great question. It is a mostly true story about Nellie Bly. So Nellie Bly is real. And we're in the 1880s, New York City. She was a newspaper reporter in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who runs off to New York City to like make it in New York. Mm-hmm. She could not get hired. A lot of the interviews, infuriating interviews she has with male editors were taken from her own writing. So, but she gets this assignment to go undercover in the local insane asylum for women and to write about it. And that is true. And it is heavily based on her published story. Where I have taken liberties is surrounding characters. So she meets up with this like cabal of lady reporters and they're all based on real women. She has some romantic love interests that was completely fictionalized by me, but those are based on real people. And one of the characters she meets, you know, a few of the characters she meets in the asylum are based on real people. So it's it's an interesting mashup, but a lot of it is true or has basis in fact.
Right. And she wrote a book about her time in the insane asylum called 10 Days. What was it called?
10 Days in a Madhouse. So her story was published in two parts in the New York World newspaper. And after it was such a huge success that she then published it as a book.
Okay. All right. Great. I did want to ask before we move on, was The Ladies Ordinary, is that real or is that something that you gave them a place to hang out?
it was based on a real thing. I met the founder of a female founder of a cocktail company. And she was like, oh, do you know the history of women drinking? And I was like, oh, well, they didn't until they did. But there, she gave me this paper where there were these back rooms of saloons that were like ladies' rooms where they could go and have a drink. And sometimes they would like fill their growler with beer and take it to the roof of the tenement and like hang out. I'm like, oh my God, I do that now. so she really opened my eyes that there were little carved out female spaces in the world. And I delved into it a little more and like hotels would have the Ladies Ordinary, which was like the room they could go because women couldn't mix in public company the way we do now. They needed their own little lady spaces.
Right. It's like the red tent, but different.
Exactly. But all the time.
Get us away from these men. Yeah. So now I love the first sentence of the book, which is Nellie did not take New York by storm. And I think I love that because it made me, even if I didn't know that this had been an actual person, it made me wonder, well, you know, was she supposed to and what does that mean and why and da da da. But she is a real person from history and a lot of your readers will have heard of her. And so I loved that sentence because it sort of maybe also set back any expectations we had that she just swept in and became immediately famous. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about beginnings and when you start a book, how you like it to begin as a writer.
Oh, gosh. you know, often the first sentence is one of the last things I write.
Oh, really?
And the first chapter in this book was one of the last things I wrote. I tried to start it a bunch of different ways because, you know, her story starts, you could start it in so many places. But I love this idea of, you know, she was a teenage writer at a newspaper and she left a note for her editor. I'm off for New York. Look out for me. She was going to take New York by storm, but she didn't.
And that's so I knew I had note. To, sorry.
That's a real note. Yeah. Look out for me. Like I'm going to make it. And so I knew I had to include, if not that exact moment in that note, I needed the spirit of it. But you know, we always want a heroine too, who's like, fighting and fighting up against the man. And so I tried to capture the spirit of it. But yeah, that first chapter was one of the last things I wrote in the book. And you kind of have to know where you're going so you know where to begin, if that makes sense.
That does make sense, yeah. And I thought it was a great place to start because we get to see her come up against something really difficult before she even understands what difficult looks like, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because, you know, it was really hard to become a professional woman of success at that time. And yet eventually she's going to have to put herself in some actual danger in order to be able to write articles that are taken seriously. So that leads me to my next question, which is, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about stunt journalism. That was an interesting component of this book. And it's what Nellie undertakes in order to make a name for herself.
So stunt journalism was just this amazing moment in women's history and journalism history. And it's basically what Nellie Bly invents with her Madhouse story, where a nice looking, respectable appearing woman goes undercover and puts herself in a sort of usually dangerous situation, but not always, and comes out and writes a story about it. And after Nellie's Madhouse story, like, it just, people couldn't get enough of this style of journalism. And there's a wonderful book about it called Sensational, The Hidden History of America's Girl Stunt Reporters by Kim Todd. And she does this wonderful job of like capturing who these women were and the spirit of their work and what they really did. So Nellie, you know, went undercover in the Met House. She went undercover to explore the black market and buying and selling babies. She also took ballet lessons and wrote about it. There's another reporter in Chicago who visited all the abortionists and like tried to get an abortion. And this is 1886, 87. So it was an incredibly daring story that we still don't know who that reporter is. And so they would go undercover in the factories and kind of expose working conditions for women. So it has this amazing component of like social justice for women. But it also gets women like out in the world and their experiences on the front page of the papers, and suddenly they're writing their own stories. And now like, you know, they bust open the newsroom door for women. And part of it was the titillation, I think, of like nice girls doing dangerous things. And but it broke a lot of boundaries at the same time. So we recognize it now as like the precursor to investigative journalism, which is very serious and respectable. And if you look at the way at least Nellie wrote her stories, she really centers herself in them. Like, I was examined by this doctor who was really handsome and blah, blah, blah. I like fluffed my bangs to make sure they were okay while he was, you know, committing me to an asylum because he thought I was insane. What does he know? God. and so she really centers herself in that. And it's like, you know, the pioneer of any like internet essay of like, it happened to me. I tried this. So Stunt Girl journalism, incredibly influential even today, even if we don't really understand or know where it came from.
Right. But
it was cool. It was just cool.
It makes a lot of sense that it would work too, because, and you did a good job of sort of leading us through the information, but you know, these women couldn't get jobs as journalists, and they had to convince the editors that in fact, women do read the newspaper and not just what they then referred to as the ladies' pages, you know? And you were so funny because you have this part where you're like, the man just like his jaw drops because he's never even considered that women are reading his whole newspaper. That was great.
Men.
Yeah, they're great.
19th century men.
Do you mind if I read a paragraph from the book and then we can talk about something else?
Go for it.
All right. So this is, you're writing about New York on Broadway near the Bowery. The busy road was lined with impressive cast iron buildings, reaching five or six stories high. They all possessed huge soaring windows to let in natural light, the better for men and women to work inside at long, seemingly endless shifts, sewing garments or assembling hat boxes or other menial tasks. The sidewalks were crowded with all kinds of people going about their lives with a glorious indifference for one another. It had to be admitted that when she first arrived, she had been taken aback by the way people from so many different backgrounds mixed so freely, especially in this neighborhood. It was such a sight to behold that fancy folks from uptown often came slumming through the neighborhood in their fine carriages to watch. I just, that's just one little tiny excerpt, but there were so many moments where you did such a beautiful job of describing New York at this period. So I wondered if you can talk a little bit about that. I assume you have some experience of New York yourself, but then also doing the research to depict it in this time period. I wondered what was that like?
So I don't know if you can hear the construction on Broadway behind me right now.
No, but okay.
I live in the neighborhood. So if I write about it so intimately, it's because it's just the world I live in, but it was really a wonderful challenge for me to be like, what is the history of those buildings? How did that intersect with everything? And who was in New York at this time? So the cast iron buildings was a way of making these buildings as you could build them higher and put in bigger windows so you could have the natural light. This was before electricity, so people could work longer. So now you have this booming like factory economy, which is at once, you know, empowering to women, but not because it gets them out of the house and finding work. But most, I don't know, that's a whole complicated thing.
I do hear that now. Now that you've mentioned it, have they just ramped it up?
Yes,
I'm sorry. No, it's okay. It gives us the ambiance. It's fine.
Welcome to New York.
What were your research sources? Did you like go online and read stuff, or do you like going to the library, or do you like going to the archives, or what do you do?
So I'm really lucky that I can take walking tours of the neighborhood. So the Bowery Boys podcast also does walking tours in the neighborhood. So I found that helpful. I'm a big reader. So in History of New York books, you know, there's a section in every bookstore around here. So I dive into books, and I learned a lot about like the history of the Bowery that way, and the neighborhoods, and like who is in New York. So books like, I read one, it was about like a gay queer history of New York City. Oh. And that's where they talked about the whole culture. There's a whole culture of like men dressing as women, and they were known as fairies, and they would like go on the Bowery. And that was this like poor area where like all the immigrants mixed, blacks and whites mixed. It's just like a hop, skip, and a jump from Chinatown. Like it was a really vibrant, kind of dangerous neighborhood. A lot of the drinking was happening there. And, but the rich people would take carriages and go slumming up and down the Bowery to like watch, all this, you know, incredibly diverse and interesting life. And, you know, one of the things that draws me to New York City and, the history there is the opportunity to like really explore the diversity of humanity mm-hmm. here, because we're all just all up in each other's stuff. Yeah. There's no room otherwise.
Yeah, that was an interesting point that the wealthy people would come in their carriages and come slumming through. And, you know, at first you read that and you think, oh, that's kind of voyeuristic or whatever. But, you know, you can kind of see it. You know, it's fun to go see the other half, whoever they are and what they're looking like and what they're doing. And I remember my husband and I had to go pick somebody up in Montreal at one point, and we ended up in the Lubavitch neighborhood, and the friend that we were picking up was late. And we just were fascinated just watching, you know, what looked very much like an old world neighborhood, you know, 2 hours from home, filled with just such a different life than we experience. Anyway, I'm kind of taking it off in another direction. But anyway, that was fun to think about. It's people watching.
Wonderful, always.
Yeah. It is, especially when it's different from what you're used to.
Exactly.
Okay, so this is one representative line of the thinking of the times. All women belonged to someone. That was how the world worked. There's a lot of this sentiment in the book, and certainly it's accurate to the time period. So some of this is and could be even more depressing, especially once she makes it into Bellevue and then eventually the Institute for the Madhouse, which is not Bellevue, but Blakeslee Institute. So I'm curious how you were able to, you do this incredible job of balancing, I think, what feels like a very real tender sympathy for what these women are going through and humor. And I think that has to be difficult. So I would like to know how you do that, please. Go.
So the world was terrible to women in the 19th century and earlier, still bad. But, and I want to write about that and I want to explore it and I want people to know about it, but I also, you got to find the funny is what I tell myself. And there's a quote, I think it's like Emma Goldman, like, if I can't dance at the revolution, I'm not going. So, you know, you can't, I want to write about these time periods. I want to share what life was like for women. I want us to understand women's history and how it impacts us today and all of that. But also, like, women are funny. We have friends. You can't take the joy. There's like, we're always doing cool stuff. And I want to capture that too, because, you know, that was the revolution. It was finding friendships, teaming up together, having a man say, oh, you ran through this or blah, blah, blah. And then going and doing it anyway. And I mean, I think that's great. I love those stories. So it's a balance. It takes a lot of drafts, but and a lot of, I think, just human connection to characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is related to your characters, but it's your points of view. You do multiple points of view. For a little while, like I think the first three chapters, it sounded like maybe we were going to be sticking with Nellie and her perspective as a narrator through the book. But then, I think that all the chapters are third person close. I don't think you're ever in the first person. So, but then you did eventually start to dip into a couple of other characters' points of view. Colton, who's another journalist, who's sort of her rival, but he's distractingly handsome. And another woman journalist as well. So anyway, just talk a little bit about deciding who your narrators would be.
So I originally thought it would be all Nellie all the time, but those insane asylum scenes, like, it got so heavy. It got so heavy and started to drag in. You know, it's really heavy and dark material, but I still wanted to find the funny and find the joy and the pacing of it. So I knew I had to kind of like give readers and myself a break. So we switch into these other points of view. And so Marion is pursuing another story that may or may not be related to what Nellie is doing. And there's a sense of, you know, she's got the same ambition as Nellie of like, I want to make it. I got to find a big story, a big juicy story. And then Colton, a distractingly handsome rival. I have dreams for them. You know, he's got his own story where he's also trying to make it as a reporter in New York City. And Nellie stole his job interview and kind of his job, which neither Nellie or I are sorry about. And I did make that up. But so I took his plot line from this is true, a rival newspaper, The Sun, was publishing these like kind of exposés before the world story dropped. So people were already following the saga of like Nellie Moreno, Nellie Brown, and they, like, who is this like cute, pretty girl who's like insane? So I thought that added just, I thought having Colton chase that story and breaking it up and having this sense of like Nellie's own story is possibly getting away from her would help move everything forward faster.
Yeah.
So that is why we have Marion and Colton
in there.
Okay, I like them.
That's exactly what I think the listeners of the show are interested in, because it's for writers and people love to hear your writing decisions and stuff. And so along those same lines, I want to ask you about dialogue. Your dialogue, now, not in every scene. In some scenes, certainly in the insane asylum, what's the best way to refer to that?
You know,
because they aren't all insane, and it's just but as you say,
the asylum.
What is insanity anyway? Is something that Nellie thinks right. of herself at one point, which was a great question to ask. In there you have prose interspersed and dialogue that's a lot more, I think a lot more grounded and not so snappy and humorous. And I think that's really appropriate. On the other hand, could I read again?
Yeah.
This is when she's trying to get a job, and she's talking to an editor called Cockerell at The World. Cockerell grunted his interest. "I did 6 years at the Pittsburgh Dispatch," Nellie said quickly. "Let me guess, you wrote for the ladies' pages," Cockerell drawled. "Not just the ladies' pages. I did an 8-part series on female factory workers. I led our coverage of the Haymarket riot," Colton cut in. "That was you? Great work. Thank you, sir. And from such an esteemed editor as yourself. I could get myself arrested. I could spend the night in jail." This is Nellie again. "I'm sure conditions are terrible, which will make for a great story." Anyway, it goes back and forth like this. And I was like, this sounds like Broadway banter. It's really interesting. Like, the way that you're doing this dialogue is so, it really does. To me, it sounds like the kind of dialogue that's being written for theater. Do you think about that while you're writing?
So I have a really wonky way of writing where I write an entire draft of my novel in dialogue first.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. Like, I've never heard that.
It's a romance novelist gave me that tip. So it's a way to let the dialogue really carry the story as much as possible. And So I've gotten in the habit of it. It's a very messy first draft that is just the characters talking to each other. And I love it because it lets the dialogue do the heavy lifting of telling the story. Right. And then I can also see what scenes I need, where are my plot holes, things like that before you've, you know, crafted these luscious paragraphs of prose that like physically hurt to delete if you need to. So I really start there. And then I also, that scene in particular, I worked really hard on dialogue. So I'm thrilled that you're reading it as an excerpt in this show, because it takes a lot of work to get it that snappy and punchy. And I do have in my mind, especially in that scene, like an old time romantic comedy where they're just like bursting against each other. And I love it. So yeah, I don't, theater, movies, that's what I had in mind.
Yeah.
And just the competition too.
Yeah. It was really fun. I could just see them on stage going back and forth and around and going for the laughs, you know, which is what happens in theater.
Yeah.
Which is probably why the scenes in the asylum didn't read that way, but you're not really going for laughs there.
So, no.
Yeah. What about that depiction of the asylum? How accurate was that to her presentation? Was that pretty much all sort of taken from her notes and her experiences?
Yeah, I took it from her her published story, which is, you know, easily downloaded on any website, or you can get a free version on Kindle. So I read that. I took it extensively from that. I also read some other books. There's one called Damnation Island that's just all about Blackwell's Island in that time period. And so I used that. I also read a book on like the history of kind of mental illness and treatment of mental illness. So I bolstered Nellie's description with some other well-researched modernly written books. So the treatments either Nellie described or I've read about them in other books that are based on treatment of the mentally ill at the time. It's based on, yeah, it's a lot of it's true. Yeah. And horrifying. And I mean, they had no concept.
Bathed in the same bathtub of water, 1600 women being bathed in just several bathtubs of the same water over and over and over as it gets disgusting and cold.
Disgusting. That's straight from Nellie's story. I just read a biography of a woman called Elizabeth Packard, who was committed by her husband against her will in the Civil War era. And she at first was in the sane wives ward of the asylum, just the inconvenient wife ward. But she acted out and got moved to a lower, lesser ward. And the first thing she did was go to all her fellow inmates and give them sponge baths and clean them. And one of her fights in the asylum was to get them to be bathed at all. And then you get these horrible, disgusting bathing conditions. So we treated people terribly. Yeah. And it's criminal. And it's, thank goodness, the Nellies and the Elizabeths of the world really exposed this. And when they got out, they didn't just forget about what happened to them. They really used their voices to make changes and raise awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. They had no understanding of mental illness then, which is sad.
Right. And then, you know, there's speaking of that cold bath water, there's a moment where a doctor at the asylum mentions to Nellie that the medical thinking at the time is that the insane cannot feel temperature. And I'm like, well, that's convenient. You know,
convenient.
It makes it easier.
Yeah.
Really? You think that? Because that's lazy.
It's lazy. And that was from a book about a history of, you know, understanding mental illness. And it was thought that, you know, they didn't have all these feelings and they needed to be shocked to their senses. So they get these brutal shock treatments. People.
Yeah, although I do know that shock treatments are still used and do work in certain conditions. And it's interesting because I thought that was horrific. And my husband used to work in anesthesia and he would say, no, actually, we helped to anesthetize people before the shock treatments and they really, really help some people. And that just surprises me. But on the other hand, what do I know? I don't know anything.
Yeah, I think the shock treatments like today, I don't feel like as well versed on, but they would like try to horrify or terrify people to like bring them back to their sentence. So they would like submerge them in freezing cold water or like drop that. Like I don't know off the top of my head exactly because I've kind of blocked it out. It's so terrible.
Well, I always like to ask my guests what they've been reading lately that they would recommend to people who are listening. Do you have any books that you've read lately that you'd like to?
I do. So I am in the middle of a book called Diamonds and Deadlines. And I don't know how you don't read a book called Diamonds and Deadlines. And it's a biography of Mrs. Frank Leslie, who was a kind of contemporary of Nellie's, who took over her husband's newspaper empire and ran it and was incredibly successful. It was Mrs. Frank Leslie's Illustrated News. So she did this, she was incredibly successful and like powerful. And I'm only halfway through. I'm still on her up and up, but I'm familiar with her story because I love the idea of like a lady newspaper boss. She had quite a scandalous personal life and then ultimately left her fortune to the women's suffrage movement.
Oh, wow.
So she is checking all my boxes of favorite things of like historical women, newspapers, women's suffrage, women who broke all the rules. So I am Diamonds and Deadlines.
Okay, great. And then is the Mad Girls of New York the first in a series?
To be determined. It's to be determined. What I can say is I am working on more Nellie stories. I am captivated by her years in New York City as this young single woman who's a sensational, famous, successful reporter. And I think there's a lot to work with there. I think of it as like Sex and the City with social justice and longer skirts. So I'm working on more of those stories. There's information on my website about that. And I'm also working on a novel about the women's suffrage movement in America.
Oh, great.
Because it is just full of dynamic women.
The whole movement? Like the whole thing?
All 72 years. Although we can argue that too.
Okay, cool. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
We're on Zoom and nobody can see this on the podcast, but you have bangs. So, And that's a big part of Nellie's starting to try to set herself apart. Before she tries to look mad, she tries to set herself apart. She cuts bangs for herself. But ultimately, it adds to her perception as a mentally insane person. So I don't want to ask about your bangs.
I am thrilled for this question. Yes, Nellie and I both have bangs. And one of the things I loved about her and knew I had to write her story is when I was reading her work, she'd be like, oh, I took the curl out of my bangs. Or like she's like in an insane asylum and it's like fleeting worries about her hair. And like she mentions them. And if you look at pictures of the real Nellie, she's got bangs. And I think it's cool. And when I was working on a chapter early in the novel where she has gone to New York to take it by storm and it's not working. She's like, what do I do? And I was like, what better encapsulates the frustration of a woman than when she's like, I'm going to cut my own bangs. Right. Like it never goes well. And I think it's something we all have kind of like done as a teenager to like, try to like change up our look or our vibe or just see, or like, we got to do something. We're going to cut our own bangs. So I put that in there.
I love too that the cover has a silhouette of her. So there's not enough detail to really see much about her, but there is a tiny little bang coming off the top of her head.
Oh, didn't even notice that. Amazing.
I wondered if maybe you insisted on it, but you can kind of, I think that's what that is right there.
Oh yeah, look at that. Yay, Berkeley cover design team.
I thought that was her bangs. Anyway, so somebody read your book.
I do not cut my own bangs.
I wouldn't. It's not a good idea. Your bangs are good. No. You've got good bangs.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. My last question is always a question of advice for writers. And in your case, and you can take this whatever direction you want, but one thing I thought about was advice on mixing genres. So you've got historical fiction and romance here, but it's also, like social justice. You know, you've got a lot of things mixed into this book. So if you have advice for mixing genres or any advice for writers.
Well, that's a great question. My advice to writers about mixing genres is don't do it if you can help it. Because it's really hard to sell. It's hard to sell to agents. It's hard to sell to editors. It's hard for buyers to sell to bookstores because everyone wants to know what shelf does this go on in the bookstore? What category are we placing it in online? So straddling genres it's complicated. And I hate this advice. But if you really just want to, write whatever you want, I think.
Right.
Pursue it passionately. And, you know, we have a saying in my family, it only takes one person to get it and move it forward and things like that. So go for it, write what you love. However, if you want to really just sell, I think it really helps to understand your categories and how to place your story in those. Having said all of that, I have also written some blends. The Mad Girls of New York, it's a little bit biographical, historical fiction. It's a smattering of romance. It's got a little bit of mystery and thriller to it.
Yeah.
So I just try, you got to pick one to focus on. It was like the women's historical fiction. So I think that's the primary category it lands in.
And I actually, I think it's overblown to call it a romance at all. I mean, it really has. Romance is part of life, and attraction is part of story. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I've written like 24 romance novels. Right. This is not a romance novel. It does have a happy and optimistic ending for my readers who care about that, which is me and all my readers. I will never write a story that doesn't have a happy ending. So that's really important. It's not a romance. And, you know, I really struggled with, like, I wanted to write this Nellie Bly story, and I really thought of ways to make it a romance novel, but it didn't want to be that. So I decided to branch out and let her story be what it wanted to be. So that's why it's landing more in historical fiction.
I think that's smart because she's a figure that has a certain amount of understanding already in our modern, in our contemporary culture, right? So people who understand who she is and what she was about, it's a little bit strange when all of a sudden she's in a relationship with someone she never had a relationship with. I mean, it's fun to think about and to play with.
And I mean, the rest of her life with her work and romances and marriage is just so fascinating and kind of, you can't make this stuff up. So I didn't want to write myself out of being able to write that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been speaking with Maya Rodale, the author of The Mad Girls of New York, published by Berkeley. Maya, I want to thank you so much for speaking with me. This is really fun.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great chatting with you.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was an interview with Maya Rodale. We spoke before the leaked memo that informed the country that the Supreme Court is planning drastic alteration to the rights of American women. I must say, as I now post this, I'm astounded and discouraged by how relevant 19th century women's concerns still feel. My feelings on this matter are my own and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WBTV LP, its management board, or any of its affiliates. Back to Maya Rodale and the Mad Girls of New York. The book is now out from Berkeley, and you can learn more about Maya and her work at mayarodale.com. This week's Write the Book prompt was suggested by my guest, Maya Rodale, who said it was inspired by our conversation. Take this scenario. and write it forward. She was in a rush to get downtown, the sooner the better, and definitely before it was too late. But when she turned onto Broadway, what she saw shocked her. She would not be getting downtown anytime soon. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. I'd love your feedback about Write the Book. Let me know if you'd like me to interview some of your favorite authors or if you have events to announce. Be sure to tell your friends about the show and the podcast site, which is writethebook.podbean.com, where all my episodes are archived. And that means really like 600 unique episodes. We're up to 700 and something, but a few of them are reruns. New and recent episodes of Write the Book are available wherever you get your podcasts. Just subscribe to have new ones sent to your app. A reminder to my listeners who write, which I think is most of my listeners, I do share a writing prompt each week. So if you've missed any, be sure to check the archives of Write the Book because I do write them out on the blog podcast site. You can also access the podcast and link to social media through my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. If you like the show, please rate it where you find it. Talk about it with people who might enjoy it. Up next at 5, stay tuned for Feminist Frenzy, the radio show with a feminist agenda. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM WBTV-LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3 WBTV.org. Stay well and have a great week.